A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 24, Philosophy of Sankhya, verses 1 to 29. Verse 1. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Tate Sambhavakshami Sankhyam Purvavinishtitam Yavigaya Puman Sarya Chayad Vaikapikam Paman. Lord Shri Krishna said, "Now I shall describe to you the science of Sankhya, which has been perfectly established by ancient authorities. By understanding this science, a person can immediately give up the illusion of material duality." Mukham karati vachalam bhangam langhayate girim yakipam tamam bande shigaram yamatavinam Om agyana timarandasya gyananjana sharakaya Chakshuminitam yena tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So what do you remember from the last class about the Avanti Brahman, Song of the Avanti Brahman? Devaki Nandan? Okay. Not the body. The body is not suffering because it's dead. The soul is not suffering because it's spiritual. It's the false ego. The soul embracing the false ego is actually suffering. Okay, what else did you remember from this last class? Yes. By fixing the mind on Paratmanishta, or the Lord, the Supreme Lord, one can cross the ocean of material existence. Yes? Mind is a mirror reflecting the material world. And we are embracing the mind, the soul. Yes? In the back. If we try to enjoy Ladini potency, we will suffer. It will be mixed with suffering. Yes? According to the opinion of the Gyanis in Tapaloka, bhakti appears in the mind as smarnam. Yes, Vanamali? The sloka for sannyas, it's not just for sannyasi. According to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, grihasthas can also be in the same. It's not a matter of change of dress, it's a matter of consciousness and attitude. Yes, Prashanta. The mind can only be controlled by devotional service according to the sannyas verse, so therefore the mayavadis must be controlled by their minds. Adi Purush? Suffering is a mistake. You're not suffering because the body can't suffer and the soul can't suffer, so it's an illusion. Well, you should have been here for the last class. You would understand. And you would be convinced.
Happiness also a mistake?
Happiness and stress. Happiness and stress. Krishna Sarupini. The subtle body is dissolved at the level of Vastu City when you realize your relationship with Krishna. Yes? We can counteract the influence of the planets by chanting Hare Krishna on the Namaba stage. You wanted to say that, yes? If you cannot control the mind, just chant the song and your mind will be controlled. That is a benediction by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Yes. Acha?
Yeah.
Why are you eating
this
fruit? Then what is the use of the austerity of living on fruits only? Okay. So. Well, I mean, you just said, I didn't say anything. You just quoted. Yeah, therefore. We have to apply what we learn. Okay. We will make you break your vows. Yes. Okay, no problem. No problem. So, anything else on the last class? Okay, let us continue. Purport of verse 1. In the previous chapter, the Lord explained one can give up material duality by controlling the mind and fixing it in Krishna consciousness. Easy, huh? Right? Just be Krishna conscious and no problem. This chapter describes a Sankhya system in which the difference between matter and spirit is elaborately explained. When was the last time you heard about Sankhya? philosophy.
Illumination.
Third canto. Yeah, just recently, last week, right? Sunday? Saturday and Sunday, Burijan Prabhu is another. So every other chapter practically is Sankhya Yoga here. So here we have another one, but it's in a different presentation. The other one was counting, because Sankhya means counting, the word Sankhya. But this one is going to be about creation, because Sankhya also is about creation. And destruction will be here too, in this chapter. So in the purport, by hearing this knowledge, one can easily separate the mind from material contamination and fix it on the spiritual platform in Krishna consciousness. So that's what the last chapter was telling us to do. We must separate our mind from material contamination. The Sankhya philosophy system mentioned here is that presented by Lord Kapila in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, not the atheistic Sankhya presented later by materialists and Mayavadis. Okay, here's a question from third canto. What's the difference between the Lord Kapila Sankhya and the atheistic Sankhya? One difference. What's one difference? Yes. Pardon me? There is no super soul in the atheistic Sankhya. What other difference do you remember? Because I did a whole... Oh, no, I didn't do it. It was Burja. I did it in Mayapur. I did a whole comparison between the two, the atheistic and the Lord Kapila. Yeah. Yes, the atheistic speaks about many purushas.
The main problem that we find with Sankhya is that they say Prakriti is independently...
Yeah. Prakriti is the source. And from Prakriti comes Purusha and Prakriti. From Pradhan. They say Pradhan is the source. The atheistic Sankhya says it is all coming from Pradhan. From Pradhan comes Purusha and Prakriti. And then they go on with Mahatattva and the rest. We agree on that part, but... The other part, the origin, we don't agree. What is the cause? And they say it's Pradhan. And there are many Purushas. Yes, Leshuka. Yeah, there's no glance. Yeah, with ours, we understand the Purusha throws his glance. And from the glance, everything comes in every stage. So their philosophy is without the glance of the Lord. They don't have the glance. And for us, it's the finishing touch. It's between every level, you need the glance. He has to look at the creation, and then it happens. Without the glance, it's just static. Nothing happens. The demigods, they were praying after they were created. You know, now we're stuck. What can we do? What do we do now? And they needed the input of the Supreme Lord. And when the universal form was made, then all the demigods entered. And it was again stuck until the consciousness, until the Lord entered the heart. And then the universal form came to life. So their philosophy is Sankhya without Krishna, Sankhya without God. And our philosophy is we see the glance of the Lord in everything. And even now, we'll hear in this chapter that even for maintenance you need the glance, not just creation, for maintenance you need the glance also. So this purport, material elements which emanate from the potency of the Lord evolve in a progressive sequence. One should not foolishly think such evolution begins from an original material element without the assistance of the Lord. That's just what we're saying. This speculative theory is generated from the false ego of conditioned life and constitutes gross ignorance unacceptable to the personality of Godhead and his followers. So where is their philosophy coming from? False ego. And what did we hear about false ego in the last chapter? It is the culprit. It is the cause of suffering. It is the knot which ties body and soul together, this false ego. So their philosophy is coming from false ego, so therefore it is also illusory. Sadhiraj has a comment on this. Oh, yes. And he tells a difference. There's a difference between the last chapter and this chapter, although the aim is the same. The last chapter... with the Avanti Brahman, Lord Krishna conveyed the importance of understanding distinction between body and the soul and how this distinction affects our conceptions of happiness and distress. Now, in this chapter, Sankhya, distinction between matter and spirit. So it's a more general, it's the same thing, but in the other one it was very specific, body and soul. But now we're going in a more general understanding. What is the difference between matter and spirit in this chapter? So, purpose is to by understanding distinction between matter and spirit, becomes easier to understand difference between body and self, which was the subject of the last couple of chapters. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has comment on this first verse of this chapter. Describes creation annihilation of the cosmic manifestation. Such creation and dissolution is a subject matter of Sankhya philosophy. It has been established from the Bhikshu Gita in the previous chapter that the cause of the living entity's happiness and distress is accepting the subtle body, of which the mind is the principal component, as the self. So Vishnu says we are accepting our subtle body as our self, and that's why we suffer and enjoy. This is sum and substance of the material concept of life. This misunderstanding can be eliminated when the difference between matter and spirit is clearly understood. The analytical study of material nature and difference between matter and spirit are subject matters of Sankhya system of philosophy. Okay? So we will go to verse 2. Originally, during the Krita Yuga, when all men were very expert in spiritual discrimination, and also previous to that, during the period of annihilation, the seer existed alone, non-different from the seen object. So there was no adibhotic thing, nothing you could see during annihilation. There's no adidaivik, only the seer existed, non-different from the seen. And I was just reading Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati the other day, that book by Bhaktivikasa Swami, and he was explaining that we are the seen, and we are not. The seer is Krishna. A devotee should think like that. When you go to the temple, it's not like you are the seer and Krishna is the seen. He is the seer and we are the seen. So when you think like that, it's a whole different concept of thinking. You think, oh, I am being enjoyed by Krishna, not I am enjoying Krishna, but I am being enjoyed by Krishna. He is seeing me. He is seeing me, and so I should try to be something that's nice to be seen. It means our attitude and our devotion. He is seeing our devotion. He's not seeing the external things. So I thought that was interesting when I read that. Drishya and Drishtavan? Anyway. So, purport. Kriti Yuga is the first age known as Satya Yuga, which knowledge, being perfect, is not different from its object. In modern society, knowledge is highly speculative and constantly changing. There is often a vast difference between people's theoretical ideas and actual reality. In Satyuga, however, people are viveka nipuna, or expert in intelligent discrimination, and thus there is no difference between their vision and reality. So we heard yesterday how when two people meet, there's six different people present, six different conceptions. One is how you see yourself, how the other person sees you, and what is the reality. What is the reality? And then same for the other person. So here there was no difference between vision and reality. So everybody was seeing the truth, seeing things as they were, as they are. In Satyuga, the population in general is self-realized. Seeing everything as potency of the Supreme Lord, they do not artificially create duality between themselves and other living entities. This is a further aspect of the oneness of Satyuga. The time of annihilation, everything merges to rest within the Lord. At that time also, there is no difference between the Lord, who becomes the only seer, and the objects of knowledge which are contained within the Lord. Liberated living entities in the eternal spiritual world are never subject to such merging, but remain forever undisturbed in their spiritual forms. Because they are voluntarily one with the Lord in love, their abode is never annihilated. So we heard about Satyuga, one class called Hamsa. All people are unalloyed devotees from birth. And the Veda was, there is no division of Vedas, only one Veda, and expressed by the syllable Om. So again, we have a comment. At the dawn of creation, in Krita Yuga, all living beings were spiritually realized, aware of their connection to the Lord. They understood both their oneness with Him and their difference as well, relishing a sweet relationship with the absolute truth. But in due course, as the world ages trudged forward, realization diminished, and living beings were not as spiritually equipped as they once were. Krishna implies that when this natural spiritual evolution wanes, so the question is why he's talking about Satyuga and annihilation. So here's the answer. When this natural spiritual evolution wanes, it is necessary to find various means to distinguish between matter and spirit. So in the Satyuga, they didn't need this Sankhya philosophy, but because the age changed and people weren't so spiritually aware, now they need Sankhya Yoga. An understanding that was innate in prior ages, Sankhya is one such way to cultivate this realization. So Sankhya is a very interesting way to understand the difference between matter and spirit. So verse 3 brings us to the beginning of creation. That one absolute truth, remaining free from material dualities and inaccessible to ordinary speech and mind, divided himself into two categories, material nature and living entities who are trying to enjoy manifestations of that nature. So from the absolute truth, we have the two energies, material and spiritual. That is the living entities, jiva tattva, or jiva, and then prakriti. For of these two categories of manifestation, one is material nature, which embodies both the subtle causes and manifests products of matter. So there's two causes. The other is the conscious living entity designated as the enjoyer. Purport. According to Śrīla Jīva Gosvāmī, prakriti here refers to the subtle pradhana, which later becomes manifest as mahatattva. 5. When material nature was agitated by my glance, the three material modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, became manifest to fulfill the pending desires of the conditioned souls. So karma was there in the glance, the jiva was there in the glance, and time was there in the glance. So here it's talking about the glance of the Lord. That was the first thing. First the Lord was there, and then he glanced at the material nature. And then the modes came to fulfill the pending desires of the conditioned souls. So time, because time was there, time agitates everything, and time makes the modes appear also. Purport. The Lord casts his glance over material nature to remind her the conditioned souls have not worked out their chain of fruitive activity and mental speculation, and creation is therefore again necessary. So what was the one word we learned in the third canto to explain the Lord's mood in creation? If anybody, yeah? Compassion, yes. He was feeling compassion for the living entities and for Prakriti because her other wives were awake, the internal energy, and she was sleeping. So he wanted to wake her up so that she could also enjoy with him, and also so that the living entities would get another chance. The purpose of creation is to become Krishna conscious and go back to Godhead. That's the whole. The creation is done for the devotees, for those who are devotionally inclined, but who still have mixed karma, there is creation. The Lord desires the conditioned souls get opportunity to become Krishna conscious and love of Godhead by understanding futility of life without the Lord. So he wants everybody to come and enjoy with him. The modes of nature arise after the glance of the Lord and become inimical to one another, each mode attempting to conquer the other two. So right in the beginning, there was a fight between the modes. The glance, right after the glance, then the modes start fighting, according to this purport here. Interesting. There is a constant competition between birth, maintenance, and annihilation. So birth is passion, maintenance is goodness, and annihilation is ignorance. So these are the three modes, and there's a constant competition between them right from the beginning. Although a child desires to take birth, a cruel mother may desire to kill the child through abortion. So this is an example of competition between birth and death. Although we may desire to kill the weeds in a field, they stubbornly take birth again and again. Birth and death. Similarly, we often desire to maintain our physical status quo, but still deterioration sets in. And that is called old age. We want to be in goodness, we want to maintain, but just by the force of time, the body deteriorates. Is time the cause of our suffering? We learned that in the last chapter. No, it's not time. It's how what you think time is doing to you. How you perceive. Yes, it's because it's also spiritual energy, and we are spiritual energy. So we're reviewing our last class here. Thus, there is constant competition among the modes of nature, and by their combinations and permutations, the living entities try to enjoy innumerable material situations without Krishna consciousness. The word Purushanumatena indicates the Lord sets the stage for such material futility, so the conditioned souls will eventually come back home, back to Godhead. So the purpose of the suffering is to go back to home. 6. From these modes arose the primeval sutra, along with Mahatattva. By the transformation of Mahatattva was generated the false ego, the cause of the living entities, bewilderment. Purport. According to Sridhar Swami, sutra is the first transformation of material nature that manifests the potency of activity. It is accompanied by Mahatattva, which is endowed with the potency of knowledge. So sutra is karma, or kriya shakti, and Mahat is Jnana, or Jnana Shakti. This is the original karma, desire for karma and desire for Jnana. These are the two contaminations that cover the soul. It's karma, witches, karma and bhukti and mukti. Bhukti and mukti.
Karma and
Jnana.
So sutra is translated as karma?
Here, it says activity, potency of activity. And then in the purport it explains, in the material world, one's real knowledge is covered by fruitive activity and mental speculation. So this is how it translates into our reality at this point. This original karma and jnana comes into the karma and jnana, which covers which is the impetus for activity in this material world. As one's devotional service to the Lord slackens, these two tendencies grow automatically, just as diminishing of light automatically brings an increase in darkness. So the original karma and jnana are in the sutra and mahat. So these are coverings that cover us. So pure devotional service, jnana, karma, and avritam, uncovered by karma and jnana. So this covering is part of the creation. So now we hear about false ego. Does anybody remember something about false ego from the last chapter? If you maintain your conception of I and mine, what will this produce? What will be the result? Adipurush? The next material body. If you keep this conception of false ego, I and mine, you will produce, the effect will be another material body. You'll be creating your next material body. Yes? Yes, another effect of this concept of I and mine is we will get aversion to devotional service. This is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said. So two effects of keeping this false ego conception of I and mine is that we will get a new material body and we will get aversion to devotional service. 7. False ego, which is the cause of physical sensation, the senses, and the mind, encompasses both spirit and matter and manifests in three varieties, in the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So now we have the false ego, then again, modes, false ego in the modes. Purport, the word china, chin, maya, encompassing both spirit and matter, is significant in this regard. The false ego is the illusory combination of the eternal conscious soul and temporary unconscious body. So there is a knot called karma granti or hridaya granti, and that knot is the false ego, which connects the soul and the body together. This is the knot. This is what keeps us together, body and soul, is the false ego. Because the spirit soul desires to exploit illicitly the creation of God, he is bewildered by the three modes of nature and assumes an illusory identity within the material world. Struggling to enjoy, he becomes more and more entangled in the complexities of illusion and only increases his anxiety. So two results of trying to enjoy, struggling to enjoy in this world. What are the two results of trying to enjoy?
More,
yes?
More,
more anxiety, and you become more entangled. So the more you struggle in the net, then the more you get entangled in the net. You struggle to get out. Enjoy means to get out of the net. It's actually, we heard from Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati that happiness means the absence of distress. Okay. This hopeless situation can be overcome by taking to pure Krishna consciousness, in which the pleasure of the Supreme Lord becomes the only goal of life, one's life. This is the way out that we heard in the last chapter. It is the boat which will help us cross over the ocean of material existence. Verse 8. From false ego in the mode of ignorance came the subtle physical perceptions from which the gross elements were generated. So we have the tanmatras, and we have the sense, subtle physical perceptions, and the gross elements. From false ego in the mode of passion came the senses, and also intelligence, not mentioned here. From false ego in the mode of goodness arose the 11 demigods and also the mind. These are from the modes. Purport. From false ego in the mode of ignorance, sound is generated along with the sense of hearing to receive it, and the sky is its medium. Next, the sensation of touch, air, and sense of touch are generated. Thus, from subtle to gross, all the elements and their perceptions are generated. The senses, because they are busily engaged in activity, are created from false ego in the mode of passion. So senses, the objects are in ignorance because they're not, they don't have a life of their own, although they seem to. The sense objects are in mode of, are produced from the mode of ignorance, and the senses are produced in the mode of passion because they're in activity. And then in goodness we come the 11 demigods who are Adi Daivik. So we have Adi Bhautik in the mode of ignorance, Adi Atmik in passion, and Adi Daivik in goodness. Deities of the directions, the wind, the sun, Varuna, Ashwini deities, Agni, Indra, Upendra, Mitra, Brahma, and Chandra. Verse 9. Impelled by me, all these elements combined to function in orderly fashion, and together gave birth to the universal egg, which is my excellent place of residence. So this is a real summary of the creation. In the third canto, we heard a lot more detail that was happening in between. We had all these elements produced, and then the demigods were there, and they didn't know what to do. And so they were praying to the Lord for empowerment. And then the Lord answered their prayer, and then it says here, impelled by me. Because the elements were not combining when only the demigods were there. They were just sitting. All the elements were sitting there, demigods were there, but nothing was combining. So therefore, they prayed to the Lord for empowerment at the end of chapter 5 of third canto. And then the universal form was produced. The Lord entered, and he went in the egg, floating in the causal water. And from his navel came the universal lotus, birthplace of self-born Brahma. So verse 10, purport. Supreme Lord here describes his appearance in his transcendental pastime form of Sri Narayan. Lord Narayan enters within the universe, does not give up his purely transcendental body of knowledge and bliss. Lord Brahma, however, born from the Lord's navel lotus, has a material body. Although Lord Brahma is the most powerful mystic, his body, which pervades all material existence, is material. Whereas the body of the Supreme Lord Hari Narayan is always transcendental. Rishinath comments, in the shell of the universe, I remained as the second Purusha on the Garbhodak. A lotus, which is the cause of the world, arose from my navel, and on the lotus, Vairaja, Brahma, form of Brahma for enjoyment, appeared. Then four-headed Brahma appeared. So different Brahmas, according to Rishinath Chakravarti, with each creation. There's three Brahmas. There's one with Mahavishnu, there's one with Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and then again, there's the demigods that come there, and then there's the one who does the creation, the Visarga Brahma. So this is okay. So we have the universal form. The universal form is also the body of Brahma. So Brahma is the soul of the universal form. And this Dazzle has a supersoul. Supersoul is Vishnu. So just like we have soul and supersoul, so the universe has soul and supersoul too, the universal body. And the soul is Vishnu, and the So is Brahma, and the super soul is Vishnu.
Mahavishnu.
No, not Mahavishnu. Then, yeah. I would say it's Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who is the soul of the universe.
This universal form is the one shown to Arjuna.
Yeah, there's different universal forms, different aspects. So one aspect was shown to Arjuna, the aspect of time, Kala. And there's different aspects. Verse 11, Lord Brahma, the soul of the universe. See, he's the soul of, so it has a meaning, soul of the universe. It means there's a universal body and he's the soul. So when you say soul of the universe, it's really, actually, it's true. Being endowed with the mode of passion, perform great austerities by my mercy, and thus created the three planetary systems called Bhur, Bhuvar, and Svar, along with their presiding deities. So then there's the third level of demigods created by Brahma. There's a third set of demigods. Now, an interesting comment by Satyaraj on this verse. I mean, not comment. His translation of the verse is really interesting, so I wanted to read his translation. By my mercy, Lord Brahma, the first created being, used his passion in a constructive way. He performed great austerities, creating the three planetary divisions, Bhur, Bhuvar, and Svar, along with their presiding deities. So he used his passion in a constructive way to create the universe. I thought that was quite nice comment. So if we have passion, use it in a constructive way. You can create a universe or do something constructive. We say, do something constructive with your passion. So he constructed the universe, and that was really nice. Verse 12, heaven was established as the residence of the demigods. Bhuvarloka is that of the ghostly spirits, and earth as the place of human beings and other mortal creatures. Those mystics who strive for liberation are promoted beyond these three divisions. So where do those mystics go? What is beyond these Bhur, Bhuvar, and Svar? What is beyond? Mahar Loka, Jana Loka, Tapa Loka, and Satya Loka, not Brahma Jyoti. But of course that is beyond, but it's not where they go. Eventually they go there, but at this, right away they don't. And this is in the purport. Planets such as Indraloka and Chandraloka are meant for the heavenly enjoyment of the most pious fruitive workers. So for the karmis, they go to Swarga. The highest four planets, Satyalok, Maharlok, Janalok, and Tapalok, are meant for those who are most perfectly endeavoring for liberation. So the question was, for those endeavoring for liberation, then they go to these planets. If they don't make it, yeah. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so inconceivably merciful. He is promoting the most fallen victims of Kali Yuga beyond these four planets and even beyond Vaikuntha to the supreme planet of Lord Krishna in the spiritual sky called Goloka Vrindavan. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains, heaven is the residence of the demigods, earth is the residence of the human beings, and in between is a temporary residence for both classes of beings. So in between, I thought that was interesting. Bhuvarloka. Huh? That is Bhuvar. That's in the sky. Ghosts, Rakshasas, and lower demigods go there. In between. Ghosts and Rakshasas, not the other demigods are higher than that. Not the lower demigods. Just the ghosts and Rakshasas, as far as I know. For both classes. Well, actually, if you consider both classes of beings, then it may be also the lower demigods. Kimpurushas are in the earth. That is, they're on Jambudvip. They're in Jambudvip. One of the nine, there's nine Varshas. We're in Bart Varsh, and they're in a different Varsh. Kimpurusha Varsh. They're in Jambudvip. They're not, they're in the earth. Earthly, what is it called? There's not Bhumandala, but I mean heavenly earth, earthly places. There's Bila Swarga, Bhu Swarga, Bhu Swarga and Swarga. There's three types of heaven, and one of them is on the earth, and that's in these other All the varshas except Bharat varshas are heavenly places to live. Only Bharat varshas suffer your reactions. 13. Lord Brahma created the region below the earth for the demons and the naga snakes. In this way, the destinations of the three worlds were arranged as the corresponding reactions for different kinds of work performed within the three modes of nature. So if you have karma, you need a place to do your karma, to receive your karma. And so he made the place, the different planets where you go if you have karma, according to your type of karma, upper, middle, or lower. 14. By mystic yoga, great austerities, and renounced order of life, the pure destinations of Maharaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satyaloka are attained. But by devotional service, devotional yoga, one attains my transcendental abode. So remember, for the Grihasthas, it's Swargaloka. For the Brahmacharis, Maharaloka. For the Vanapras, Tapaloka. And for Sannyasi, Satyaloka. These are for all those who are renounced people. Purport. Sri Jiva Goswami explains the word tapasa in this verse refers to austerities. Oh, it's in the purport. Performed by brahmacharis and vanapras. A brahmachari who practices celibacy perfectly in some particular stage of his life achieves maharloka. And one who perfectly practices lifelong celibacy achieves janaloka. So mahar and jana is for brahmacharis who have practice celibacy partially or fully. By perfect execution of vanaprast, one may achieve tapaloka, and one in the renounced order of life goes to satyaloka. These different destinations certainly depend on one's seriousness in the yoga system. In third canto, Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma explains to the demigods, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha travel in their airplanes made of lapis lazuli, emeralds, and gold. Although crowded by their consorts, who have large hips and beautiful smiling faces, they cannot be stimulated to passion by their mirth and beautiful charms. Thus in the spiritual world, the kingdom of God, inhabitants have absolutely no desire for personal satisfaction, since they are completely satisfied in love of Godhead. Because they only think of the Lord's pleasure, there is no possibility of cheating, anxiety, lust, disappointment, and so on. It's described in Bhagavad Gita. Tameva sharanam gacha sarva bhavena bharata tapasara param shantim stanam paps yasishasvatam. Sign of Bharata, surrender unto him utterly. By his grace you will attain transcendental peace in the supreme and eternal abode. 15. All results of fruitive work have been arranged within this world by me, supreme creator, acting as the force of time. So reactions are arranged by Krishna in his form as time. Thus, one sometimes rises up toward the surface of this mighty river of the modes of nature, and sometimes again submerges. Purport. Oun Machati refers to one's promotion to the higher planetary systems, as mentioned in previous verses, and nimajati refers to being submerged in a miserable condition of life by impious activities. In both cases, one is drowning within the mighty river of material existence, which carries one far away from one's real home in the kingdom of God. So, one rises up, Vishwanath comments, one rises up in samsara to satyaloka and again sinks down to low destinations like plants. Imagine going to Satyaloka and then becoming a plant. But it is said in Gita that, the demigods come down in the rain and they're born as grains. And then somebody eats it and then it becomes a child, human. Gets a human birth. That's a good question. Yes, we know in Swargaloka they go up and come down in rain. It's interesting. Well, this comment was they can become plants, so. Well, you can talk to. How can they become plants? Yeah, that's. Well, there are. Yeah, go ahead.
The Sutra says they don't become plants, they cling to plants.
What does that mean?
And then in some sattva form, they just cling to the planet.
When they come from Brahmaloka,
when they come down to earth,
oh, they cling to plants.
And when they are eaten, then these souls enter the semen as well.
Really?
They don't become plants.
They cling to plants.
This is specifically clarified by Vedanta Sutra.
Oh,
exactly.
Vedanta Sutra. Oh, very good. So they don't become plants, they cling to the plants. Vedanta Sutra, some Vedanta Sutra. That's not the problem.
Because they're wet.
They come in the rain.
Yes.
All right. After class, you can discuss that.
They're going to the ground. There is no plant. They're going to the ground, to the mat.
Okay, let's hear what Satyaraj says about this verse 15. The analogy of a river is fitting here. When people act in the mode of goodness, it is like rising to the top of the river, where one can breathe and exist peacefully. However, if one acts in passion, worse still, in ignorance, it is like being caught at the bottom, where suffocation is likely and darkness takes precedence. So imagine drowning in the ocean of material existence. Sometimes you come up and breathe, and sometimes you go down and sink and suffer. So this is the news of this material world. What is happening? What is the news? Remember Mahabharata. What is the news? Here's one news that, you know, people are drowning in this ocean, sometimes coming up and sometimes going. What's the other news? Yeah? Time. We are in a frying pan. And time is the stirring ladle. And who's the cook? I thought time was the cook. Who's the cook? Time is the cook. The ladle is sun, or I don't know.
Months.
Seasons, okay. Yeah. Time is the cook. We are cooking. We are being cooked by time in this frying pan of the material world. And that is the news today. Today's news. Oh, it's always current. This is a very current news. Very current. If you think you're not frying, then good. That's very nice. Okay, so verse 16. Whatever features visibly exist within this world, small or great, thin or stout, certainly contain both material nature and its enjoyer, spirit soul. So everything is a combination of Purusha and Prakriti. Gold and earth, verse 17, are originally existing as ingredients. From gold, one may fashion golden ornaments like bracelets and earrings. From earth, one may fashion clay pots and saucers. The original ingredients, gold and earth, exist before the products made from them. When the products are eventually destroyed, the original ingredients, gold and earth, will remain. So they're trying to explain something here. Since the ingredients are present in the beginning and end, they must also be present in the middle phase, taking the form of a particular product to which we assign for convenience a particular name, such as bracelet, earring, pot, or saucer. So it's always gold all the way through from beginning to end, and it's always, or it may be, always be earth, beginning to end, although it may take a shape of something in between, and we call it a name. We can therefore understand, so what? So now they're going to tell you what you should think about this, what you should conclude. We should understand, since the ingredient cause exists before the creation of a product, and after the product's destruction, the same ingredient cause must be present during the manifest phase, supporting the product as the basis of its reality. So this is a philosophical statement, just to understand that the cause of creation and what is there before creation and what is there after creation is also here during. So this is what all of this is going to lead to. Purport. The Lord here explains the original cause is certainly present in its effect, citing the example of gold and clay functioning as the causal ingredients of many different products in which gold and clay continue to be present. For our convenience, we assign different names to temporary products, although their essential nature continues to be that of the ingredient and not of the temporary product. And so we have this table. The cause of the table was a wood. So before it was wood, and now although we call it a table, it's wood. It's wood, actually. And after the table is finished, it will still be wood. With wood. So this is what they're saying, that what you see at the beginning and end is also there in the middle. A material object, verse 18, itself composed of an essential ingredient, creates another material object through transformation. Thus one created object becomes the cause and basis of another created object. Particular thing may thus be called real, in that it possesses the basic nature of another object that constitutes its origin and final state. So what the whole philosophy here is that this world is real, is what they're proving, because the Lord is there before, the Lord is there after, so he must also be there in the middle. So therefore, this world is real, because it contains the original creator. So that's what this purport says. Also, they take the clay pot, it's coming from clay, which is coming from earth. So earth is the original ingredient forming the clay, and clay is the cause of the pot. When the pot is destroyed, it will again become clay and merge back into earth, its original cause. So clay is the beginning and the final stage of the pot. So the pot is called real, for it possesses the characteristics of clay, which exists before and after, and earth exists before and after the clay. So clay is real because it possesses the characteristic of earth. Similarly, earth and other elements are created from Mahatattva, which exists before and after the elements. And they're considered real because they possess the characteristics of Mahatattva. Then Mahatattva is ultimately creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cause of all causes, who exists after all is annihilated. So he gives meaning and character to everything because it is created by him and it comes from him, and after it goes to him. Therefore, it's real. And that's why we don't say that the world is illusion, like the Mayavadis. We say the Lord is real. The world is real because it comes from the Lord himself. And it's even now, the Lord is there in the world. So from the Paras of Personified Vedas, verse 15 of chapter 87 in the purport, there's another analogy. Just as a man's footsteps, whether placed on mud, stone, or bricks, cannot fail to touch the surface of the earth, so whatever the Vedas discuss within the realm of material generation, they relate to the absolute truth. So this is another analogy saying that just like we have to touch the earth wherever we go, so the Vedas, whatever they say, have to touch Krishna, or the ultimate reality. So verse 19 gives the conclusion. The material universe may be considered real, having nature as its original ingredient and final state. Lord Mahavishnu is the resting place of nature, which becomes manifest by the power of time. Thus nature, the Almighty Vishnu, and time are non-different from me, the Supreme Absolute Truth. So Krishna is saying that actually it's I who am the origin and dissolution of everything. He says that in Gita, but here he's like really analyzing how it is. How is he origin? How is he dissolution? Purport. Material nature is the energy of the Lord Mahavishnu in his plenary portion, and time represents the Lord's activity. In this way, time and nature are always subservient to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, creates, maintains, annihilates all that exists through the agency of his potencies and plenary portion. So he is the absolute because he has everything within him. So let's see a little comment from Satyaraj on this, verse 19. Yes. A class of philosophers in India claim the material universe is unreal, a mere illusion that has no substance. So who are those people? Mayavadis. Mayavadis. They say, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mitya. Brahma is real. Brahman is real and the universe is unreal. However, it must be understood, so Krishna refutes this view with strong logic. However, it must be understood the reality of this universe is different than that of the spiritual realm. Matter is temporary, real, but lacking the eternal feature of the transcendent realm. This makes it illusory, but not illusion. So that's an important understanding. This world is illusory, but it's not illusion. Illusory means, okay, we misunderstand it. Our understanding of it is illusion. There is illusion in our mind. How we understand this world, that is illusion. but the world itself is illusory. Because it comes from Krishna, who is real, it must also be real, even if the nature of how and to what extent it is real might be negotiable. Okay, so verse 20 is a really important verse, at least in my understanding, although it's not quoted that much. But this verse proves that not only creation annihilation, but in maintenance the Lord's is there and his glance is there. Even now, the Lord's glance is there, right now. And this verse tells why. So I'll sing it in Sanskrit before I read it. Sarga pravartate tava korva paryena nisha mahanguna visargarta stityanto yavarikshanam. As long as the Supreme Personality of Godhead continues to glance upon nature, the material world continues to exist, perpetually manifesting through procreation the great and variegated flow of universal creation. So, it's not that he just looked at Maya and then that was it. He's still looking. He's still watching. And if he stopped looking for a second, this world will be finished. The glance of the Lord must be there. How does he say this in Bhagavad Gita? He says this. Maya tyakshena prakriti suyate sa characharam. That this material nature is working under my supervision, and that's maya adyaksha, my eyes, my overseeing. So he's watching. He's looking. He's watching the nature, and if he didn't, it would be all finished. He has to glance. Even for maintenance, you need to glance. So sometimes we think, oh, he just glanced and then he looked away and that was it. And no, he's still looking. He's still watching. He's still glancing. Because nothing can happen without his glance. It can't go on without his glance. Purport. Although the Mahatattva, impelled by the force of time, is the ingredient cause of this world, it is clearly explained here that the Supreme Lord is personally the only ultimate cause of all that exists. Time and nature are powerless to act without the glance of the Personality of Godhead. So time, without the glance, there is no time cannot work. Nature cannot work. He creates unlimited material variety for the sense gratification of the conditioned souls who try to enjoy life as the children of particular parents and as the parents of particular children throughout the 8,400,000 species of life. So here is what Prakriti and time are lacking, and that's the glance of the Lord. That without the glance, they cannot do anything. They are dependent on the glance of the Lord. They are not independent. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur asked the question, how long does the creation last? And the answer, it lasts for the period of maintenance. The multifarious creation with unbroken continuity of generations for enjoyment of the jiva through creations of various bodies lasts till the end of maintenance or protection by the Lord. When is that end? It lasts as long as the Lord glances, as long as he desires to protect it. And what's another way to measure how long it lasts? The breath of the Lord. When he breathes out, then the creation exists. And when he breathes in, then it goes back. So it exists as long as one breath of the Lord. One breath, that's all. Imagine his time. In the time of the spiritual world. One breath. 21. I am the basis of the universal form, which displays endless variety through the repeated creation, maintenance, and destruction of the planetary systems. Originally containing within itself all planets in their dormant state, my universal form manifests the varieties of created existence by arranging the coordinated combination of the five elements. Purport. According to Sri Shiraswami, the word Maya refers to the Lord and his form as eternal time. So now we'll hear about the annihilation in verses 22 to 27. Now we go backwards. At the time of annihilation, the mortal body of the living being becomes merged into food. Wow. Food merges into grains. And grains merge back into the earth. The earth merges into its subtle sensation, fragrance. So I guess it's food for somebody. No, actually, it merges into grains. Food for the dogs, for the worms, for the
vultures.
Fragrance merges into water, and water further merges into its own quality taste. That taste merges into fire, which merges into form. Form merges into touch. Touch merges into ether. Ether finally merges into the sensation of sound. The senses all merge into their own origins, the presiding demigods, and they, O gentle Uddhava, merge into the controlling mind, which itself merges into false ego in the mode of goodness. So the demigods and mind are in false ego and goodness, so it goes back to that. Sound becomes one with false ego in the mode of ignorance, and all-powerful false ego, the first of all physical elements, merges into the total nature. The total material nature, primary repository of three basic modes, dissolves into the modes. These modes of nature then merge into the unmanifest form of nature, that's pradana. That unmanifest form merges into time. Time merges into the Supreme Lord present in the form of the omniscient Mahapurusha, the original activator of all living beings. That origin of all life merges into me, the unborn Supreme Soul who remains alone, established within himself. It is from him that all creation and annihilation are manifested. Purport. The annihilation of the material world is the reversal of the process of creation, and ultimately everything is merged to rest within the Supreme Lord who remains full in his absolute position. 28. Just as the rising sun removes the darkness of the sky, similarly the scientific knowledge of cosmic annihilation removes all illusory duality from the mind of a serious student. Even if illusion somehow enters his heart, it cannot remain there. So here is the benefit of hearing all these verses and knowing about the creation, is that it removes illusory duality from your mind of a serious student. So there's the catch. You have to be a serious student, and then all duality will be removed by hearing this knowledge. Purport. Just as the brilliant sun removes all darkness from the sky, a clear understanding of the knowledge spoken by Lord Krishna to Uddhava removes all ignorance concocted by the material mind. One will then no longer accept the material body as a self. Even if such illusion temporarily manifests within one's consciousness, it will be driven away by the resurgence of one's spiritual knowledge. Now, Vishwanath makes a comment. Although it says the jiva merges into Paramatma, this means the jiva with his undestroyed swarup is embraced by Paramatma. So whenever you hear any verse that says the jiva merges into Paramatma, the real meaning is he's being embraced by Paramatma in his original spiritual form. So this is the understanding. If you ever hear anything about, Christ Prabhupada didn't like that word, merge. But sometimes we do hear it. Paramatma remains without any upadhis from whom it is seen creation and destruction of the universe arises. So Krishna remains. At the end, at the beginning, what is the shloka from Chatushloki? Aham evasam evagre nanyad yat sarasaparam. Verse 34, is it? Of ninth chapter of second canto. The first of the Chatushloki is what is Krishna is saying, that I am there in the beginning, I am there in the middle, and I am there at the end. Verse 29, thus I, the perfect seer of everything material and spiritual, have spoken this knowledge of Sankhya, which destroys the illusion of doubt by scientific analysis of creation and annihilation. Purport, Lord Shri Krishna has explained that the material mind accepts and rejects many different concepts of life, generating innumerable false arguments about the actual process of perfection. But a person who takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can see everything with clear intelligence. One who understands how the Supreme Lord creates and annihilates can be liberated from material bondage and devote himself to eternal service of the Supreme Lord. So the purpose of hearing Sankhya is to engage in devotional service to Krishna. And that's the purpose of every chapter that Krishna speaks in this Uddhava Gita. You should engage in devotional service, and this will help you. So the Sankhya philosophy is one of the ways to engage your intelligence in devotional service, because one of the parts of intelligence is doubting. So if you have doubts, then hearing this creation will help to remove your doubts. Creation, annihilation, help to remove the doubts from your mind. So any questions or comments? Yeah. Yes, glance appears to be very brief. That's true. Yeah, continuous glance. It's a very long. For him, it's not long. You know, it's one breath. But for us, yeah, for him, it's a glance, you know. It's like he just glances and that's it. And, you know, and then the whole creation happens. And then he closes his eyes and finish.
He asks to maintain as well.
Yeah, but you should understand how long his glance. It's just, you know, yeah, as long as he exhales, that's the length of his glance. It's not, for him, it's a glance. It's the definition holds true for him. It's just a brief, you know, how long does it take you to exhale? But for us, we have a different time frame. So for us, his glance for us is, you know, trillions of years. So it's true. It's for him, it's just a glance. I mean, he just threw a glance and that's the glance. It's still his glance. So you have to understand the difference in time. So it's actually true. How long does it? We make glance even longer than an exhale of breath. But for him, it's just an exhalation. And then he stops, and everything's finished, and he looks again, and comes out, and stops. Closes his eyes. Yeah, it's not that, not long for him. Yes, Manmali?
10:08.
10:08, right, yeah. I was thinking of that verse the whole time. 10:08, aham sarasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartiche. I'm the source of everything, everything emanates from me. Iti matva bhajante mam bhuta bhava samanvitha. So anyone who understands this, it's the same thing, that I'm the source. What happens to anyone who understands bhajante mam bhuta bhava with intelligence and love? He will understand, yes. Engages in devotional service. Who understands with intelligence, Buddha and Bhava. Samanvitaha. Buddha Bhava. Yes? Yeah, they didn't need to. They already understood what's the difference between matter and spirit. They you know, by birth, they know the difference between matter and spirit. No, yeah, nobody understands. No, in Treta Yuga came, that's when. It diminished in Treta Yuga. In Satya Yuga, it was okay. It sounded like it to me. It sounded like, yes, we were reading about that, I think, in Third Canto, that there was a point at which everything changed. That was when Treta Yuga came. And then sacrifice manifested, you know, in the heart. There was one king, actually, who was living there between Satya and Treta Yuga, and then sacrifice managed. I think it was Puruva who was in between the junctions, and then he did sacrifice to go to Urvashi's planet. You will be hearing about him in Ila Gita. Yeah, it's described that right at the beginning of Treta Yuga, then that's when it diminished. Is that what I remember? Yeah, we did study that. Yes. No, he was not criticizing people, himself. I don't know exactly which yuga. He was in a different different manu from us. So which yuga, I don't know. But I think it was also Satya Yuga, because it mentions that somewhere we just read that demons like Hiranyakashipu were also born in Satya Yuga. So there is some mixture of the modes.
And also we can see
yeah, it says there is sometimes that. Yeah, there is a mixture. We read that also, that sometimes when we were reading the chapter 12, I don't know which chapter, one of the chapters I spoke on, and it was saying that sometimes even demons are born in the Satya Yuga, like Hiranyakashipu. Yeah, I mean, he was the gatekeeper from Vaikuntha.
he was the
they were daughters of Diti,
yeah.
who was very high.
But yeah.
Well, that's part of the purpose. Yeah, it will come in one of the chapters. That I think is one of Burijan's chapters. That statement will come in Burijan's. Yeah? You have something? Yeah. That's another point, that actually the yugas are affecting the earth a lot more. Yeah, much more. Yeah. Yuga Sandhya. Yeah, the first one was Hangsa. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, remember his comment at the beginning of creation, the beginning of the day of Brahma, the first Satya Yuga, everybody was Hamsa, and after that it wasn't.
Yeah.
And after that it kind of deteriorated. I mean, but they were still great devotees. Anand Vrindavan? Yeah, it's all in your mind. Is it simultaneously? Okay. How do you balance the fact that the world appears? We say it's all in your mind, but also at the same time it's real. So we balance it. The way to understand it is this: that when we see it in relationship with Krishna, then it's reality. When we see it without Krishna, then it's not reality. So that's what that is the second Chaturshloki verse, which says, if you see anything without me, know it to be my illusory energy. So when it's how we see, it's our conception and how we use things. So if we see without Krishna, means okay, I am enjoyer. It's for me. And if we see with Krishna, okay, it's for Krishna's service. So there's two conceptions. And when we see this is for Krishna's service, then that's reality. And if we see it's for me, then that's illusion. Yeah. Yes, Prashanta. I don't know, actually.
The mortal body speaks.
That's the first time we're hearing this, so it's confusing us. Yeah, okay. Adi Purush, would you like to say something about that?
It was in the Bhumi Gita, in a later chapter, that it said that he may call himself a king, but his real name will be ash, stool, something else on death, on dying. Because he will be eaten by worms, so he will become food for worms or jackals.
Or vultures.
Or vultures.
Yeah. Or he'll be burnt. Yeah.
And then he will anyway go to death.
Okay, Bhumi Gita. How does it become food? Well, food for the vultures, but then it doesn't merge into grains.
Then it becomes earth, and from earth grains.
No, but earth.
Stool of the vultures.
Grains come before the earth, though. This is the problem. It's not logical. See here. It's first. It becomes food, then grains, then earth. It's just like a movie. If you put it on reverse,
yeah.
So you reverse the movie, and then you just see what you just reverse it. You reverse the movie, and then you see what happens. Put it in reverse. It became, it's the food, then the grains are there, and then it goes back in the earth, you know, the grains go back in instead of coming out.
And this is the annihilation, because otherwise it goes to the earth, and then you get another body again.
Yeah.
But in this
it just goes backwards, that's all, you know. There's the body, the food, and then it goes back into food, and then it goes into the grain, and the grain pops back in the earth, and the earth goes into whatever. So you just see the movie, the grain comes up, you eat it, it becomes the body, and so then just go backwards.
Yeah,
I guess it's just putting a few more steps in there than we usually see, in between earth. Yeah.
But it's the same, because the grain comes from the earth.
Right.
So the body comes from the earth.
And grain is also considered earth, too, like an earthly thing, in one sense. It's in the categorization of earth, as opposed to water, fire, ether. Last comment. Oh, wait. That was silver. Silver. Yes, in two words or less.
The connection of this word.
Which verse? Anyway, I don't understand your comment, but that's okay. Anyway, it's whatever. Any? Yes, Liz Shukar?
Yeah,
it seems to be that, yeah, we can see that, I mean, the Chatur Shloki in action here. We can see how, you know, how it's, what is not reality, what is reality, and what is there beginning, what is there at the end. Even I thought of the third verse when I was speaking. I enter in the elements and I do not enter.
Yeah.
I was thinking also of the third verse when I was speaking. To the, yes, I enter into the elements and I do not enter. As the elements enter and do not enter, so I also enter and do not enter. I thought that was... So he is... The way he enters is, one way is through his glance. That's how he's touching everything, with his glance. And the other way is as Paramatma. But as we heard, he does not endeavor for fruitive activities. He's, yeah. Said glance there.
It's like seeing, or
yeah,
like he knows that everything is happening.
Both. Both are there. As far as I understand from the sloka, he is glancing. Okay. Any other question? The question comes to my mind. What happens during Chaturmasya? Is he sleep? Huh?
One.
Which one is that? Kshir Dashai?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that explains it. Mahavishnu keeps his eyes open. Kshir Dashai, he goes to sleep. Only Vishnu can do that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he destroys our material things by his glance. That's a very nice comment. He pulls us back by his glance, also Sankarshan. He attracts us by his glance. That's Krishna, that's the deities. But if
that person, don't go down.
Yeah, don't go down.
So we can also, where we put our eyes, mm-hmm, where we go.
Yes, that's a fact. Okay, there he is, above the clock, time. Yes, he's the controller of time. Yes, we should look, and then we will forget everything about this material world. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.